part two, people. What's popping? What's popping, part two? Let's do it. Drew and Mark and Jay, and we are recording here on the 29th of August. I mentioned it's a big anniversary day because 5 years ago, our friend Tom Kowalski died. Killer! Yeah. Man, I'd love to talk about Killer for a half an hour, but I'll spare those who don't know Killer. He was just a great friend to so many of us, and we still miss him, still talk about him. And the Beatles performed their last major show before a crowd of 25,000 at Candlestick Park in San Francisco. But that's not all.
What else?
It was on this day in 1976. I always thought this is fun, one of those stories that I swear to God, until maybe 10 years ago, I wasn't sure if this was a urban legend or true.
What is it?
1976, on August 29th, actress Anissa Jones died of a drug overdose at the age of 18. She's best known for her role as Buffy on Family Affair.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Mrs. Beasley's owner.
Yeah.
And Jody's sister, Jody and Sissy's sister.
Oh, man.
Mr. French, of course, took care of Buffy and Jody and Sissy so wonderfully for Uncle Keith. Did you see the show much?
I have a very small recollection of it.
Sappy, just a super sappy show. Jody was played by Johnny Whitaker, who tried to have a singing career.
I didn't know she got wild, though.
Yeah, she got pretty crazy. I don't know what she OD'd on. Can you look it up?
Wait, I thought you just said, didn't you say?
A drug overdose. It didn't say what she OD'd on, though. I mean, I just can't think of this little girl with the pigtails shooting up heroin.
Let's see. Shortly before noon, August 28th, 76, after partying all night in the beach town of Oceanside, California.
Partying all night? That Buffy?
With her new boyfriend, Butch Coven, and others, she was found dead in a bathroom of a house belonging to the father of a 14-year-old friend named Helen Hennessy. Coroner's report said drug overdose, ruling it accidental. Cocaine, PCP, Quaaludes.
What?
And Seconal?
Not Buffy.
Is that what it is, Seconal? Yep.
Mrs. Beasley's
what is that?
Owner?
I've never even heard of that. What is Seconal? Do you know what that is?
Seconal.
Oh, it's a barbiturate?
Sounds right.
Anti-convulsive.
I'd like you to meet my friend Mrs. Beasley.
That chick got wild.
Yeah, how weird.
How do you do, Mrs. Beasley?
The police report also indicated a small vial of blue liquid next to Jones at the scene.
Gross.
Just never identified.
It was never identified.
It's obviously smurf
like
semen. Ew.
Buffy. I remember Johnny Whitaker. I think he did a TV special, which is like his breakout, but it was horrible. It was stupid. And one of his songs was, "Every little boy can be president.
Oh, my God.
Can be president. Can be president
awful.
Of the United States of America." I swear to God.
Wow, this is wild, man. Her brother also died of a drug overdose in 84.
Wait, her brother wasn't Jody? Johnny Whitaker?
Her real life brother.
No way. What did he OD on?
It doesn't say, because nobody cares about him. He was never on the TV.
Was he near a pile of Smurf semen,
Smurf
too?
Smurf semen. On January 14, 2012, their mother, Mary Paula Tweel, died in Detroit, Michigan.
Wow.
I had no idea that Buffy's mom lived around.
The connection is so intense.
So stupid. The doctor was charged with illegally prescribing the Seconal.
Seconal is a sleeping pill, basically.
Among other drugs-for-profit charges and concurrent undercover criminal investigation. Mm. The envelope with his business address was present at the scene.
Oh, that's
Oops!
Nice. Did he prescribe the PCP and the cocaine, too?
I don't think so.
All right.
They dropped the charges.
Speaking of cocaine, you know, Elvis used to get pharmaceutical cocaine.
Really?
Yeah. Which is bizarre because cocaine, to think Elvis... just seems like the kind of person who, I don't want no cocaine. I don't want anything near my nose. So street drugs. King doesn't do no street drugs. I only take drugs that are prescribed by a licensed physician like Dr. Nick. But I think Dr. Nick prescribed him pharmaceutical cocaine.
Wow.
And it was described in one of those books as the king would dip a Q-tip in this liquid cocaine, and he would then put it in his nostril, and whoever used this said you were just wired for hours.
Oh, perfect. He probably left it in there, so King's walking around with a Q-tip sticking out of his nose.
King liked it apparently quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was incredibly good.
Speaking of street drugs, are you ready?
Yeah.
There is a new Flocka story.
Oh, no. Don't tell me this is somebody that someone failed to put a helmet and a bat in their hands and have them take batting practice while they had this incredible adrenaline rush.
Well, the horrific... Oh,
don't tell me this is someone who was not immediately timed with a stopwatch in the 100 meter.
I think somebody tried to accomplish one of those things because, ironically, he had a baseball bat.
What? It didn't work out, though? They didn't have enough security?
No. This is why you got to give him the bat after he gets in the cage.
You got to have security in this situation. You have to lock up the cage. You have to have security at the front of the cage.
I started laughing when I saw baseball bat, which is horrific. The story's pretty horrific, but...
Well, obviously, they were trying to get the guy to take BP.
19-year-old is accused of attacking a mother and a son at their Florida home, of course, while high on Flocka just weeks after the frat boys stabbed two people to death.
Is that guy even in a frat, by the way?
Yeah, Florida State. Yeah, the Florida State face-eating frat boy. Nico Gallo.
Wait, do you know that he was in a frat?
I think so. I swear I read that. Yeah.
Why is the frat so connected to this thing? Because only frat boys would eat someone's face?
Yeah,
like the frat boy prank?
A little crazy. Yeah, he was hazed. I mean,
they make it sound like it's some fraternity hijinks.
Yeah, he was hazed. Take some Flocka and go eat a face. Well, yeah, that's a little redundant. I'm going to take Flocka and go eat a face anyway.
Well, why didn't the other pledges eat faces? I mean, is he the only one that made it in the fraternity?
He
even
was
though
first.
He's in jail for life?
Yeah. They chose to be sexton.
The other pledges were thrown out of the fraternity.
Nico Gallo,
because my boss would never done anything like that.
Forget about my man. My husband would never do that. Nico Gallo, who smiled unrepentantly in his mugshot, is said to have cannonballed through the front window of their home.
Whoa! Cannonballed!
Before grabbing the 55-year-old woman, she screamed for her son, who rushed to her aid and grappled with Gallo while she hit him over the head with a baseball bat.
Wait, was she on Flacca?
No, she's like, take this bat, go have some BP, and stop cannonballing through my windows.
Oh my God. And he gave her the bat back, and she hit him over the head with it.
She frantically as her son held him down, she called 911 screaming, I need police, someone just broke into my house, he broke through my window, I'm bleeding. So they're alive, by the way, so feel free to laugh. She went on to tell the dispatcher she has no idea who he is and that he went crazy. The woman claimed he first tried breaking...
It's like this monster was in this hotel room.
Huh?
It's like this monster just turned up at her house or whatever.
He first tried breaking through the front door and was calling out, sorry, I'm going to die. He showed extreme strength and high tolerance to pain, just as frat boy Austin Haroof... when he killed a couple in eight parts of the victim's face.
This guy in the cages.
The similarities in both unprovoked attacks has led police to believe that both men were high on the same designer drug. I'm going to be an investigator down in Florida in the drug crime unit. A witness told about he and Gallo had taken LSD and a bath salt type drug known as methylone. Let's see.
Now, was this guy shirtless? Do we know that?
I'm not seeing it. He handcuffed the man. The police handcuffed the man and bound his feet because he was kicking them. Showed all the hallmarks of a Flocka attack.
I hate when you're trying to get, and they're trying to kick you.
It was extremely, five people had to take him down.
Wow. Man, he would have hit it like 600 feet easily. Took the strength of five people.
I thought he had the bat. Wait, the mother was released from the hospital after being treated for cuts from the broken glass.
Somebody had the right idea. At least
the
it was a bat.
Son was uninjured. Yeah. We don't know what we're working with. God, I swore I read that he had the bat.
Is that the extent of the Flacca story?
Yeah, I'm just scanning through the rest of it.
There's somebody at Flacca hitting the ball pretty far.
It's still going.
Through the crowd.
It's still going.
1977, on March August 29th, three people were arrested in Memphis for trying to dig up the body of Elvis. Vernon soon arranged to have the bodies of his son and his wife moved to the grounds of the Graceland Mansion. So that's Elvis was not buried at Graceland originally until these people tried to dig him up. And then Vernon said, we got to move the king and mama. I'm sorry, mama. That's what Elvis would have said. Had he been alive, he would have said, I'm sorry, mama.
Isn't that what he said after...
after sexual relations. Coitus? Elvis would say, I'm sorry, mama.
That's weird. What a bizarre thing.
Apologizing to mama for loving another woman. She's apologizing for him.
Gross.
So Vernon arranged to have the bodies of Elvis and Gladys, his wife Gladys, Elvis's beloved mother, moved to the grounds of Graceland. 1977, also same day, Sonny and Cher show aired for the final time on CBS television. Thank God. It sucked, but it got huge ratings because there were only three shows on TV. 1995 on this day. Oh God, what a stupid day. Just the dumbest, one of the dumbest days in history. The tape recording of police detective Mark Furman shouting racial slurs was heard at the O.J. Simpson murder trial. No, he was not shouting racial slurs. He was reading a script.
Yeah. Was he reading a script or he was just telling a story?
Well, it was a script for a screenplay that was being written, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. I thought he was being interviewed for a screenplay as to how they the cops acted. Whatever. Doesn't matter. This is the day he used the
N-word. Like he was spontaneously yelling racial slurs. He was playing a role for a screenplay. He was trying to help write a screenplay, which was based on reality, I guess, or so he inferred. Furman tapes?
It's not like you're really listening to their words. Because you key on what's the truth and what isn't. First thing, anything out of a nigger's mouth for the first 5 or 6 sentences is a fucking lie. Fight or fuck around with the police, you do what you're told. You understand, nigger?
Like they bleep every other N-word?
They were tough. I can pick up 3 or 4 gang members, bring them to the station, take one in the basement, just dog shit out of it, not even asking questions, bring them up to the city down. Wait, basement's all popped up, got hurt. Next guy, take him downstairs. Okay, good shot. Where else, Johnny? That's how you get information. What is this patty cake shit about psychology? Oh, we got to teach officers how to speak Spanish. This is America.
I don't see any more N-words. Other than the first two.
Well, happy anniversary, Mark.
Yeah, the point was that the trial turned on that. That is what told us whether O.J. Simpson killed those two people was because Mark Furman used the N-word in a screenplay he was helping this chick in North Carolina write. So now we know that he didn't kill those people.
Well, if he lied about that, he could lie about anything.
Of course.
Isn't it weird to think he's the only guy that ever was convicted of anything in the O.J. case? He was actually convicted of perjury.
So incredible. 2005, August the 29th, Hurricane Katrina tore into the Gulf Coast on this date, leaving devastating effects in the city of New Orleans and surrounding areas. And there's only one thing I really remember about this, and that's the Superdome.
Oh, yeah.
All those people staying at the Superdome, and here's the entire nation watching this on CNN and a million different cable stations. And the White House just has no idea all these people don't have water.
Brownie was in charge, man.
They don't have food. Yeah, Brownie's doing a great job.
He's doing a heck of a job.
George Bush said, heck of a job. And
Brownie's doing a heck of a job.
And if you remember, they were asked, multiple people in the administration were asked, you know, what is going on? Why can't you get water and food to these people? They're starving. People are dying at the Superdome. And they suggested that they didn't know until, you know, the third or fourth day. And they're like, well, does anyone watch television over there?
Yeah.
Anyone? It's been on CNN from the first day.
What a lie.
I didn't know what to make of that.
Again, I want to thank you all for, and Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24.
Oh, my God. That's right up there with, I want to get back to work for the American people.
Yeah. I did not have sex with that woman. Monica Lewinsky.
Remember the other famous line from all the Katrina stuff? George Bush doesn't care about black people.
Oh, yes, Kanye West, of course.
As Mike Myers
stood there like dumbfounded. Dope. Oh, my God, was he shocked.
Oh, man.
It was the concert for Katrina or whatever.
Yeah, that's wild. Have you been back? You went to New Orleans with me. Have you ever done a Katrina tour?
No, I have not.
I felt bad taking it, but it was really interesting.
No, I would like to do that.
But then you find the money gets reinvested to some sort, because a lot of the houses are still just totally ruined. You can still see the markings. Remember the X?
A lot of people just abandoned their properties and never went back.
Yep.
The spirit of the people of southern Louisiana and Mississippi may end up being the most tragic loss of all.
George Bush doesn't care about black people. Please call.
Oh, man.
In the past few days.
The camera shot just changes. They stand there like, huh? For about 3 seconds, and then the camera shot goes to this other guy.
Do you see there's going to be a benefit for the Baton Rouge flooding?
There is going to be one good.
They listed all the names of performers, and I didn't know a single one.
Oh, you didn't know one? Really?
It's going to be on every Raycom channel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's a southern network.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't that be a national thing?
I don't know. The hosts are Randy Jackson and Harry Connick.
Well, I'm disappointed because you know the big performers would do that thing. So who didn't? Who failed to ask them?
I don't know.
Oh, that's stupid.
Sounds very cobbled.
And you know, there's a big story in one of the magazines this week, in one of the Bloyds, and it just has the headline of how many people were hurt, injured, dead. And it took the president, you know, what, 190 hours to get there or something like that. What was wrong with Obama? How could he not have, you know?
He's on vacation.
How could you not cut your vacation short? That was
huge.
That was really stupid.
Oh yeah,
I mean, what?
Really dumb.
What's going on there? I mean, this is not usually a guy that's tone deaf.
Not at all. But I don't know. Maybe he didn't think it was as bad as it was, or maybe I don't know. I don't know. I mean, what is the line? How many people have to be displaced for the president to show up?
But he was asked during his vacation. Mm-hmm. It was suggested to him that, you know, surely you're going to cut your vacation off, and there was a decision was made that no, he's not cutting his vacation short. I mean, it was announced, it was discussed. You know, the journalists were asking like crazy. You know,
it's just a bad look, anyways, because it's vacation.
I agree.
Yep.
Anyway,
that was bad.
On this day in 2008, on his 72nd birthday, Republican presidential nominee John McCain announced Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his choice for a running mate for the 2008 presidential election. Yeah!
Oh, and he's plagued us with her ever since.
I know. We have been stuck with
worst.
Her and her stupid family.
You know me, I don't give Trump much credit for anything, but one thing I'll give him a lot of credit for is ditching her after that stupid Iowa speech.
Oh, God.
Remember that embarrassing Iowa speech she gave on his behalf?
Oh, yeah.
She hasn't done any other campaigning for him. So he knew what a nut job she is.
You know, the funny thing was, she gave that first speech, and he went, oh, what a great pick! Oh, my God, she's the best!
Oh,
I
McCain.
Love her!
McCain's first, yeah, when she did her first
speech. She gave her first speech for McCain, and people just thought she was the greatest. And then slowly it started unraveling.
What is your favorite Sarah Palin 2008 election moment? Do you have one? I mean, besides lipstick on a pig, or no? Not, what is it? Well, pit bull.
You know, I read a lot of stuff about that was really inside stuff, but it was really funny because it was clear what an imbecile she was. But I'm trying to think publicly. I think it might be her interview with Katie Couric.
I knew it. Yep, I knew that's what it was going to be.
And when she got literally just about got in a fight over being pressed on what magazine she likes to read, and she couldn't name one magazine.
Yep, what newspaper, she couldn't name one. And then remember,
she called it a gotcha question.
That's a pretty simple question. And then remember, she had to do something, and like, Mrs. Governor Palin, we have to get you here. But she was obsessed with filling out this questionnaire for the local...
Oh, for the paper.
Silla newspaper.
Right, yeah.
My favorite behind-the-scenes story, though, is her debate prep, where she kept calling Joe Biden O'Biden.
Oh, yeah, and she called him that in the debate, too.
Yeah. What a moron.
Yeah, those stories are so funny. If you ever get a chance to read about anything deep inside Sarah Palin's run for vice president, it will blow your mind how clueless this person was.
Yep.
Here's a little glimpse of some of Sarah Palin's greatest hits. I remember what a great job Saturday Night Live did because.
Oh. Well, she never said, "I can see Alaska from my house."
No, she did. She never did say that.
It shows what great comedy writing that is.
Uh-huh.
What insight into Russian actions, particularly in the last couple of weeks, does the proximity of the state give you?
They're our next door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
Well, explain to me why
she
that
kinda said it.
Enhances not my house, your though, foreign policy credentials.
Well, it certainly does. As Putin rears his head and comes into the airspace of the United States of America, where do they go? It's Alaska.
Do you agree with the Bush doctrine?
Ooh. Uh-oh.
In what respect, Charlie?
Oh.
The Bush, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview?
That's sharp by Charlie.
Ultimately, what the bailout does is help those who are concerned about the health care reform that is needed to help shore up our economy, it's got to be all about job creation, too, shoring up our economy and putting it back on the right track. So health care reform and reducing taxes and reining in spending has got to accompany tax reductions and tax relief for Americans. And trade,
she can explain what the Bush doctrine is now?
As opportunity,
she can explain what the Bush doctrine is after this? Are we still on that question?
Scary
thing, I thought it sounded like it jumped something else.
I can't remember.
You know what's funny? She sounds very hesitant answering this, but today she would say the same exact thing.
All those things under
just more forceful and confidently.
This bailout is a part of that.
You said the U.S. should absolutely
a doctrine is basically your foreign policy.
She lost me there.
Stop the terrorists from coming any further in. Now, that's almost the exact position Barack Obama has taken.
Are you sorry you said it, Governor?
Wait a minute. Before you say, is she sorry she said it? This was a gotcha soundbite that, well, she was
It wasn't a gotcha. She was talking to a voter.
She was in a conversation with a group of people talking back and forth. And I'll let Governor Palin speak for herself.
In fact, you're absolutely right on. In the context, this was a voter, a constituent, hollering out a question from across an area asking, what are you going to do about Pakistan? You better have an answer to Pakistan. I said, we're going to do what we have to do to protect the United States of America.
He's been in Congress for 26 years, almost always sided
and you put out for
less
Glenn Rice.
Regulation, not more.
He's also known as the Maverick, though.
I'm just going to ask you one more time, not to belabor the point. Specific examples in his 26 years of pushing for more regulation.
I'll try to find you some and I'll bring them to you. Very important in America today in our leadership. I have that within me also, and that's why John McCain tapped me to be a team of Mavericks, of independence as a team member in this.
She should have been in Top Gun.
Promising the reform, crush that gridlock.
All right, the bridge to nowhere.
Yeah. I killed the bridge to nowhere.
I told Congress, thanks, but no thanks for that bridge to nowhere up in Alaska.
But it's now pretty clearly documented. You supported that bridge before you opposed it. You were wearing a T-shirt in the 2006 campaign, showed your support for the bridge to nowhere.
I was wearing a T-shirt with the zip code of the community that was asking for that bridge.
But you were for it before you were against it. You were solidly for it for quite some period of time until Congress pulled the plug.
I was for infrastructure being built in the state.
But you turned against it after Congress had basically pulled the plug on it. And after it became a national embarrassment to the state of Alaska. So do you want to revise and extend your remarks?
It has always been an embarrassment. It's been an embarrassment, not just Alaska's projects, but McCain gives example after example after example.
We're never going to spend $3 million again to study the DNA of bears in Montana.
Governor, this year, requested $3.2 million for researching the genetics of harbor seals, money to study the mating habits of crabs.
Oh boy.
Isn't that exactly the kind of thing that John McCain is objecting to?
Those requests through our research divisions and our wildlife departments and our universities did come through.
You know, she did do one good thing. She brought us Todd. She brought Todd to the national awareness level.
Not
all I can think of with Todd is
his tattoo.
No, Jason Sudeikis playing him on SNL.
Oh, yeah.
Where he'd come on the snowmobile outfit. I don't know why that always made me laugh so hard.
I was confusing Todd momentarily with what's her brat's name?
Bristol?
Bristol. Bristol's husband.
Oh,
Johnston?
Johnston? Yeah, Levi?
Levi Johnston.
Yeah.
And he had his name tattooed on his forearm.
That's right. Just like,
Like, if he forgot his name or forgot his driver's license, he'd have his name there, right there on his forearm. And she has two baby daddies, by the way.
Yep.
Bristol does.
Yeah, she's married, though. Isn't she married to another guy, though?
Is she married to the second baby daddy?
I thought so. No, I thought she was married to another guy.
Oh, a third guy?
I thought. Am I wrong?
So she's going to have three baby daddies?
Well, I mean, if she has kids again.
Woo! Dakota Meyer?
Dakota.
Can you bring up Bristol and see who the baby daddies are?
She chose Levi over Dakota. Or Dakota over Levi, I'm sorry.
Oh, Levi's long gone. Levi...
He really became a real thorn in their side.
There's so much about Levi that is not cool with Sarah or Bristol. Mm. I just wish I could think of it because it's all funny. Hey, do you see Charlie Sheen has gotten all of his child support significantly lowered?
Right, yeah.
He is truly in financial trouble. The guy that was making $2.5 million an episode on that TV show, Two and a Half Men. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was making, for 22 episodes, he was hauling in over $50 million a year.
Yep.
I think he was there 7 or 8 seasons.
Could have been there longer, too.
Sure. But, I mean, he made somewhere around $250 to $300 million in a very short time. Now, of course, you lose half of that to taxes, maybe a little more than half. But still, after taxes...
He's not really bankrupt, though. He probably has tons of assets.
No, here's the deal. He's been selling assets. He's been liquidating stuff. He has a pile of lawsuits, mm-hmm. and he's basically answering these suits one by one, and apparently a lot of them are stuff he just has to settle.
Ooh.
Because otherwise there'll be expensive, litigious things. I mean, he'll spend literally the next 10 years in court.
What are these lawsuits over? Are they over just claiming that he told people he didn't have HIV? Is it that stuff or is it other stuff?
People that he did not tell he had HIV when he had HIV.
Oh.
There's a number of those people.
Oh.
And apparently there's a number of people, too, that threatened, that blackmailed him and said...
Yeah, which he paid off forever.
Yeah, he paid out millions, apparently, to people who extorted him. Huh. And now, I guess these are lawsuits that have some merit. I don't know how much. I mean, some of the people he associates with, yeah, it's hard to say how much merit something like that would have. But then again, it sounds like he was having sex with people and not telling me he had AIDS.
It's interesting, though. He... filed the paperwork back in March to reduce the child support payments, citing his income had dropped after selling his profit participation rights to 2.5 Men for $27 million. So was that $27 million?
A lot of money.
I mean, is that what, did he have to pay off? That's what he paid everybody off with?
Well, I got the impression that he was raising cash so he could clean up his legal affairs.
Okay.
But
he had $12 million in debt, most for mortgages, taxes, and legal fees.
I just have a hard time understanding. How can this guy not have $100 million in the bank somewhere?
Drew, his monthly income is $167,000.
From what? Residuals?
$600,000. It was $600,000, then he sold those rights, and now it's $167,000. I mean, he's still paying a shitload in child support.
He sold the rights for what?
Profit participation rights to 2.5 Men for $27 million.
Okay, makes $167,000 a month. Yep. So that's, he still makes well over $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right around $2 million a year. But, you know, he has multiple mortgages.
His health cost per month is $25,000, too.
What?
His mouth.
$25,000.
Yeah.
For what?
Because he doesn't have, for procedures not covered by health insurance. I don't know.
What are people with money doing? I mean, how are they treating AIDS, for Christ's sake? You need $25,000 a month to treat AIDS?
I guess.
Is that to knock it out?
I don't know.
I mean, it's so strange. You know, I remember someone who had a brother that had AIDS. This was, you know, 15 years ago. And he didn't have money. And he had HIV didn't have full-blown AIDS for quite a while, was not a big party or anything like that. Anyway, he was getting what his half-assed medical insurance would give him, which mm-hmm. wasn't much. I think he was fired from his job, and of course then people didn't have to carry you. Mm-hmm. I think he was dropped from the policy. They knew what was going on. Yeah. He was dropping from the policy. So he got, you know, whatever the minimum, you know, cocktail of drugs one could get without medical insurance. And
how much did that cost?
It was a lot, you know, a couple hundred, $300 a month or something, which he really had a hard time covering. Not to mention he wasn't feeling great, didn't feel like working, but he had to. So he got full-blown AIDS pretty quickly. And when he got full-blown AIDS, I'd say he lived 7-8 months.
Oh, God.
I mean, just went, just like that. And when it got bad, it was like, well, this is, you know, this is over, get hospice. I mean, just what a pathetic situation to, you know, for somebody without any resources.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just sad. $25,000 though. $25,000 a month?
Yeah, and that's also what he's paying Brooke Mueller and Denise Richards, $25,000 a month.
But he was paying them $110,000 a month
total, so 55 each.
Right.
So now he's paying 50 total.
Yeah.
But apparently, if they went to court, they
why does Denise Richards need $25,000 a month for two daughters? I mean, is that just bullshit?
Yeah. If they went to court, they'd probably only get $10,000 a month. So that's why they settled, because Sheen agreed to give them real estate. It's a little silly.
It just.
But hey, he had kids with them.
I just saw him. Kids. I just saw an interview with him where he was very testy and kind of short. And every now and then he'd sort of revert to the old Charlie Sheen, you know, the sense of humor.
Tiger Blood winning.
Not like that Charlie Sheen. Oh. Just the nice Charlie. He's a good guy. He's okay.
Should we call him?
Sure. Oh, we've got his number. That's right. Should we call Andy Dick while we're at it?
Did Andy ever call back?
No, of course not. But let's try and call him anyway.
Andy Dick or Sheen?
Both.
All right.
Yeah, I'll never forget that when Charlie Sheen was doing his traveling circus, mm-hmm. his traveling show, and he came to Detroit for the first show, and we rightfully rejected it, booed him off the stage. We didn't really boo him off the stage. We could have booed him off the stage, but he didn't leave. And everyone ended up blaming it on Detroit.
Yeah.
That awful Detroit crowd. The show was terrible.
It was so stupid. There's Sheeners number.
When he was promoting the show, they kept telling us, yeah, he'll be available for an interview tomorrow. Yeah, he'll be available in an hour. Yeah, he'll be available in 2 hours. Yeah, and it was embarrassing. We were waiting at work till 3-4 o'clock for a couple of days. And then finally we just said, you know what? If he calls when we're here, fine. We're not going to do anything ridiculous. We're not going to stay here till 7 o'clock every night waiting for, if this guy decides to put the crack pipe down to call us.
Well, then it was, he can do it at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Remember that? And I'm like,
right.
They're not going to do
this. This is after he canceled 50 times. So are we going to come in at 10 o'clock so he can cancel?
But I said, well, if he's up that late and if he's been staying up late because it was the Tiger Blood days, why can't he call at 5 a.m., which would be 2 a.m. his time? Because he was still in
LA. He can't do that.
Well, no, that's what they agreed to do. And of course, he never answered when we called the phone.
Well, should we try the Dickmeister?
There's two. I have two numbers for Sheen.
Ooh.
No Dick? What do you mean? You already tried him?
Yeah. Went to voicemail again.
Damn it, Andy. Should I just spin the dial on my Rolodex and see what pops up? If this other Sheen number doesn't work?
Well, we're going to try Andy Dick, aren't we?
He just said. He didn't answer.
Oh, that was Dick's?
No, I tried Dick already.
Okay.
I tried Dick already.
This is Dick.
Hot.
How was it, Jay?
He loved it.
This is Charlie's second number?
Nope.
Like
I thought I heard a faint hello. Charlie, Gabriel, it's Drew and Mark calling from our broadcast in Michigan for Charlie.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you tell me your name again?
Yeah, Drew and Mark from
Drew and Mark.
Yeah,
hold on one.
Michigan. What's the chance?
Zero.
He comes back to the same guy comes back to the phone.
Sorry if I offended you.
Is it Drew and Mark?
Yes.
Two people, right?
Yeah, we're calling from our podcast in Detroit, Michigan. It's like an internet radio show, and we've had Charlie on before, many times.
Okay. Huh? Okay.
Sam on the phone?
Okay.
Charlie! Charlie! Oh, can you put Charlie on for a sec?
When the fuck is this?
Charlie, it's Drew and Mark from Detroit.
Detroit?
Detroit Radio?
Yeah, and what's your point?
We've had you on a bunch of times. We were just...
Okay, so wait, do we have a fucking appointment today?
No, we did not.
Okay. So, okay, hold on.
We try it once in a while.
We've talked to Gabriel before, and, you know, if you weren't available, that's cool.
All right. Well, you know what? You know what, guys? I admire your passion. How about this? What do you guys either need, want, or desire from me?
I would love to talk to you for 10 minutes.
Can we do it tomorrow?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Shit. Now, what do you guys want? What do you want to know about? What do you want to ask me?
Well, you've popped up a lot recently. We saw the Colin Kaepernick thing today. TMZ posted that thing. I thought those comments were interesting.
We've been talking
Lenny. I didn't say shit about Kaepernick.
We've been talking to Lenny Dykstra a lot lately, too.
You know what? Lenny Dykstra is a fucking leaky diaper and a piece of shit, okay?
Whoa.
Yeah, no, he's a bad dude.
This is why we need to talk to you.
I'm not surprised you would feel that way, honestly.
No, he's a fucking asshole. And you know what? Like, whatever fucking money he makes off mentioning me, I got fucking, maybe it's two, maybe three words for him, Matthew 27. You know what I'm saying? And guys, I'm a fucking atheist.
He complimented.
Why do I know that? He's a fucking Judas.
He complimented your baseball skills.
Well, so what? You can see that shit in Major League, you know?
Yeah.
I meant thank you. So we'll do the morning, like...
What time for you, your time?
8:30?
Sure.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Is that cool?
8:30?
Yeah, whatever works for you, man. We'd just love to chat with you.
I didn't mean to be rude, gentlemen.
Charlie,
I'm fucking, like,
totally fine.
Now, no one's above common courtesy, you know?
We're over it.
Oh.
It's all
like
good.
That. Okay. Tough guys. Awesome. Thank you. You're very kind. yeah, but let's keep it, like, cool and bitching and not give all these fucking assholes, like, their forum. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
No, we wouldn't talk about you, man. We're big fans. And
you're very kind.
No, you've been through a lot lately, and we were talking about you, and... I remember when you came to Detroit, let's see, how many years ago were you doing the shows?
That was a firestorm.
Ooh, boy.
Oh, boy.
We loved
Theater?
It. Yeah.
Fox Theater? Wow,
yeah.
Damn.
Well, Detroit got a bad rap for that, and, I mean, we're all big fans here. I mean, seriously.
Hey, guys, let's make a point tomorrow to apologize to Detroit.
Okay.
Seriously, it wasn't their fault. Let's focus on that.
You got it.
Let's do it. Let's talk awesome. Some baseball, too.
Oh, bro, yeah, I mean, my team's been out of it since Mother's Day, but
do you
whatever.
Do you still have your collection of memorabilia?
No, I got a couple things left. That's it, you know.
What did you save? What did you have to keep?
I'll tell you tomorrow.
All right,
okay.
Brother.
All right. I can't wait.
I just don't want a bunch of fucking thieves, like, rolling up on my crib, you know what I mean?
No, I get it.
We're so far away from there.
Yeah, we won't be rolling up. You don't have to worry about that.
And gentlemen, I didn't mean to be rude at first. I just fucking...
No, totally, like I said, totally understandable.
No, you guys are really, really fucking sweet, really fucking smart. Ocho y media, si, mañana?
Si.
Yeah, mañana.
Awesome.
Muy bien.
And I will call the gate and tell them so.
Okay. Wait, the gate?
The gate, is that is that where
gonna,
this number rained into?
We're just going to
call...
Yeah,
that's where you guys are stuck right now, yeah.
Oh.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we're just going to call on the telephone. You know.
Oh, shit, they guys are going to come here.
No, God,
no, no,
no.
We're in Michigan. Detroit.
Oh, fuck. I thought you were in L.A.
Oh,
no, we didn't just roll up. No, no, no. No, we're on the phone.
Shit. Yeah, even a deeper apology. I'm sorry. I was yelling at you like you were at the gate.
We're rude. We're not that rude, Charlie.
Wow, now I know why you thought we were such dicks.
No, you guys are, oh, my God, I'm so sorry, man. That sucks.
Yeah, because it's funny. I thought, God, I thought Charlie would be a little cooler than this.
No,
but
guys,
you thought we were at your house.
I deepened my apology. I'm so sorry. I feel like a fucking asshole. Wow.
It's really funny how we think we really know you, but I really kind of do feel like I kind of know you.
But that's a huge compliment.
So you guys aren't at the fucking gate right now.
No, 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 no. Nope.
That's such good news. I feel like a super asshole, you know? Oh, fuck. Okay, cool.
Not at all, man.
This is really sweet.
It's all good.
Awesome. You'll be getting me right off the workout.
Cool.
Beautiful.
Right on. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, Charlie.
All right, be well.
See you then.
Okay, cool.
Bye-bye. Oh, my God.
Bye-bye. did that really just happen?
Yes.
Holy crap.
Can you believe that? That was so funny. You know, I thought something was weird that roll up on me.
Yeah, yeah. But now it makes total sense now.
What's so funny is that he would even be talking to us if he thought we were at his front gate.
Well, but if he thought we were at the front gate, he could yell and freak us out and send us on our way.
No, but just roll. You think you'd tell a guy, tell me to get the fuck out of here. You wouldn't think that he would come to the phone.
Yeah, but he's a take charge kind of guy.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I offended you. I didn't know you were so sensitive. Sorry if I offended you.
The question is, will he remember this tomorrow? Because this is what happened last time.
I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say yes, he will remember.
And now I'm trying to figure out what to ask him, what is going to fly.
I'm sure he's probably honestly not nuts to talk about the maybe the money situation or the AIDS situation.
The money thing is so fascinating.
He's talked about the AIDS stuff.
Yeah, he's talked about it.
I mean, that's how we need to start is how's the health? Because obviously he's working out.
Well, what's going on with his career right now? Who is anyone casting him?
I don't think so.
Can you check IMDb?
Anger Management was ever since he did that show. Remember the show he did, Anger Management?
He's got no movies for 2016 or 17. Nothing.
Yeah.
That's preposterous. 9/11, 2016? Hit on that. Let's see who's in that.
What is it?
9/11. Five people find themselves trapped in an elevator in the World Trade Center's North Tower, 9/11. They work together, never giving up hope to try to escape before the unthinkable happens. Charlie Sheen, Whoopi Goldberg, Gina Gershon.
Huh.
Do you think that people aren't offering him anything?
I don't know. Maybe he's not, you know, and
when you get AIDS, does that mean insurance is out the window?
Yeah, absolutely.
But my understanding is it would barely even register in his blood at this point. I mean, it's like he's beaten it a la Magic Johnson.
But if it's still there, it doesn't go away. It doesn't
Magic
disappear.
Johnson has no trace of AIDS now.
He has no HIV.
No, he does not have HIV. If he went in and said and took an HIV test, it would tell him he doesn't have HIV. That's my understanding.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's based on the level of
the virus just
certain white blood cells.
Yeah, I thought it just laid dormant.
And I got the impression that Charlie was in the same ballpark.
Huh. All right. Well,
but
we got to talk to him about Lenny.
Yeah, the Lenny thing, you know, that's really interesting that he hates Lenny, clearly.
Yeah. Lenny wrote about his crack room, you know, and not only that, Lenny talked about it on Dan Patrick, who's a buddy of Charlie. Remember when all that Charlie Sheen stuff broke? Yep. It was on Dan Patrick.
Did Dan Patrick discourage that at all?
No. Uh-uh.
Well, who would?
It's Lenny's story. It's not up to Dan to decide if it's true or not.
I'm a little surprised that Charlie would be... Okay, Charlie knows Lenny Dykstra is down on his luck. He just got out of prison. He's selling a book. Is it that cheap a shot to spill a few things? See, Lenny, the way Lenny puts it in the book... And, you know, let's face it, Charlie's not the first guy to be pissed at Lenny Dykstra. Mickey Rourke, I barely remembered the Mickey Rourke stuff in the book because there was so much other stuff. I remember thinking to myself, why is Mickey Rourke so pissed? And then I don't even really remember it that well, but yeah, I do remember it after it was discussed and I went back to the book, the part about Mickey Rourke and the little dog and the scarf. And one day Lenny sees himself in the mirror and he's wearing the scarf and he's holding the dog and he says, oh my God, I got to go to rehab. And I just thought that was kind of a joke more than real. I mean, doesn't that just seem like... It's just a nice, cute story. It sort of ties a bow around the...
Remember, that's not what he was pissed off about. He was pissed off about the 30 grand he allegedly owed him that he talked about on Stern.
Right. And I don't think that 30 grand business... really came up in the book. I just think Lenny suggested that they partied massively.
Mm-hmm.
And Lenny paid for a lot of cocaine.
You know, there is a roast coming up this weekend. I remember Charlie was a roast. He got roasted once on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk to.
No, I know there's a million things to talk to him about. I'm not even going to worry about it. Let's not think about it right now.
Yeah.
Let's wait till tomorrow. You know what I found today is that there is a flurry of great rock and roll books coming out.
Okay.
And I actually went to the bookstore and checked out dates and stuff. All this stuff is coming out in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Mike Love has a book, Good Vibrations, My Life as a Beach Boy. The same week.
Is he going to write about Kevin, his nephew?
Yeah, I think he will, really? Actually. Yeah, he loves, he's a huge fan.
Yeah.
But what's even better is he's writing about the tyrannical reign of first manager Murray Wilson.
Yes! No way.
Absolutely.
And Mike, you're flatting.
And guess who else is come out with a book that's coming out the same week?
Who, Brian?
Brian Wilson.
Are you serious?
I Am Brian Wilson, a memoir.
What?
And he's written an autobiography before in 1991, but this is when Eugene Landy, his therapist, was
in charge,
dominating his life. This time, Wilson tells his own story, his battles with his abusive father, Murray.
Oh, man. No rest in peace for Murray.
I know. I'm so fired up.
Good. That guy's such a dick.
The pressure to score hits in the 60s. This ought to be really interesting.
Come on, fellas. You think you're big stars?
You think you're big stars now?
Come on.
You haven't done a thing.
Come on, guys.
Come on. Mike, you're flatting. Brian, back up.
Syncopated. Syncopated.
I love when Brian imitates him when he's starting to make fun of him.
Mocking him. I come in late at night. Oh, man. I just lay in bed. Come on, Mike. Mike, you're flatting.
I'm a genius too, guys.
Man, you missed the Cinco pretty bad.
Make a lot of money.
Turn that down a little bit.
Brian, you're coming in shrill. We're missing all of those. El Biron on Mike. We missed it all. Okay? You're doing great, pal. Loosen up. Brian, you got a wonderful tune here. I'm sorry to yell. Al, loosen up a little more. I'll say sexy Rhonda Moore. Rhonda Moore, soft and sexy. Brian, have the guys loosen up. You got a beautiful tune here. Loosen up. You're so tight, fella, I can't believe it.
I put you over there, Mike. Here we go. Those aren't the words.
No, they're, listen, syncopate a little. What are the words?
Say it. Since you put me down, I've been out doing it in my head.
Show
him how to do it just once, Dad.
Sing it.
Since you put me down.
No. Since you put me down. Go on, go on that kick.
Since you put me down.
No.
Since you put me down.
Since you put me down, baby.
I don't remember this part. He's an even bigger asshole.
No, I just wanted you to let him sing it.
Mother and I can leave now.
Here we go. Duplicating like last time, huh?
Will you sing Rhonda, make it sexy and soft? Rhonda, you look so fine. Okay?
Rhonda, you look so fine.
Look so fine.
And I know it wouldn't take much time for you to help me, Rhonda.
Help me, Rhonda. Okay.
Yeah, they really need him.
Yeah, they really did.
Brian, your voice is shrilling through everybody. Carl, we can't hear Carl. We can hear Dennis, but we can't hear Mike. We can't hear Mike, and we can hardly hear Al.
Okay, now wait a second. Me?
Can we hear a chord? Just a chord like we used to. When you used to sing clear records, okay? Let's go. Brian, I'm a genius too. Let's go.
She was going to be my wife.
I mean, listen to those harmonies. They need him.
Fellas, I don't know, Brian. I have 3,000 words to say. Quit screaming and start singing from your hearts, huh? You're doing fine now. Watch your oohs. Come in on the low notes, Mike. Carl, ooh, you're Come on. Dennis, you're flatting. Okay, Mike, you're flatting on your high notes. Let's go. Let's roll. So you're big stars. Let's fight, huh? Let's fight for success. Okay, let's go. Okay, fellas, you got any guts? Let's hear it.
Dad, only 82 words.
I said 3,000. Come on, Brian, knock it off. You guys think you're good? Let's go. Let's go. What's the matter? You made too much money, buddy?
Go ahead now. Say what you want
to
say.
All we needed was help to loosen up. Dennis was flatting. Brian, Mike was flatting on his high notes.
Yeah.
We need help.
We need
the honest projection that we used to
They're
have.
They're starting to mess with them now, aren't they?
When you guys get too much, when you guys
get
too much money, you start.
Yeah, too much money.
Thinking you're going to make everything a hit. Okay. Now listen, let me tell you something.
Yes.
When you guys get so big that you can't sing from your hearts, you're going downhill.
Downhill.
Soil was too loud, but we wanted to make him sing with confidence. He needs it.
That doesn't make him sing with confidence. He can't hear you turn the knob.
Well, I've protected you for two years, but I can't go on if you're not going to listen to an intelligent man.
Who's an intelligent man?
Trying to hurt you.
Murray!
Are you going now?
No. This is awfully unfair for you to...
Are you going or staying? I don't know.
Discord, what you want. If you want to fight for success, I'll go all out.
No, I don't. We don't do that.
You think you got it made?
No, we don't.
Son?
We would like to record under an atmosphere of calmness.
I love you. Your mother loves you.
Look, we like to relax.
First of all, you should never have all these people here.
Second of all, they're not saying anything. You're the one talking.
You forget to sing from your hearts.
You're the one talking.
I'm trying to give you tips, and you think because you've had a few hits, you got it made. And son, remember this. You always have to fight for success because it comes from your heart. Success never comes from a phony singing for money. You have to sing from your heart.
Go tell Johnny Rivers that.
I don't care who you tell. Capitol Records, anybody. You sing from your heart because you can't compete with their brains that are trying to hurt.
Oh, yeah, he's only writing God Only Knows, Good Vibrations.
You can only... I'm sorry. I can't talk to anybody.
He's working on a number one hit right now.
From the bottom of your heart. When you forget to sing from your heart, you do it. But the other guys are...
Shut up, old man. Get out of the studio.
Who's not singing for
it? Your fat wife and leave.
Chuck and I used to make one hit after another in 30 minutes. You guys
did. Oh, shut up. You did not.
You know why? Because you guys think you have an image.
Times are changing.
Don't ever forget.
Times are changing.
Wow.
Unreal.
Syncopated.
Gee, I wonder why he had all those mental problems.
Yeah.
Why did he crack up?
Yep.
I think the old man had something to do with it.
So he's got a book. Who else? So
yeah,
Mike
he's
Love,
got a book
Brian Wilson.
Born to Run by Bruce Springsteen. Eh. 7 years.
Sorry.
Oh, you're such a dick. 7 years he's been working on this book since after the Super Bowl in 2009, Bruce wrote an online diary about the experience.
A diary? What are you, a girl? It's called a journal when a man writes it.
God. What is your problem with Bruce Springsteen? He's everything you should love.
I just don't like him. I don't know.
He's a far-left liberal.
Well, that,
Bruce Springsteen
wait, what
should...
What does that mean? Why would I like him because of that? I just care about the music.
Mark, you went to Michigan. You love Ann Arbor. You love everything about it. Bruce Springsteen should be living in Ann Arbor right now. He would fit in perfectly.
I don't know. I don't like the music. I've never heard a song that I really like from by him. I know it's... Hey, you're bringing it up. I was letting it go.
No, you were making fun of him for calling it a diary. Okay, he started sitting down with a notebook, it says.
A journal.
Regularly.
Yeah, okay.
He wrote Born to Run over the next 7 years, often taking as long as a year off to come back fresh. I'm not going to try and sell it anymore.
No, I'm just because of me. I mean, millions of people love him.
Homeward Bound, The Life of Paul Simon. And this is weird thing about Paul Simon is that they say it's the most deeply researched book ever attempted on Paul Simon. I guess there hasn't been much written
about
these guys. Yeah, they interviewed more than 100 people from ex-girlfriends to collaborators, although Simon and Garfunkel would not give an interview for this book, which might make it better.
I hope it goes all the way. Oh, yeah, it usually does, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of times.
I hope it goes all the way up to the DNC performance. Remember when he performed at the DNC, the Democratic
National? Oh, yeah.
That was
weird. It's full of news stories. Carlin tracked down Heidi Berg, the former SNL band member who claims she inspired the ideas for Graceland when she gave him a tape of some of these South African musicians who would play on the album.
You're taking credit for Graceland because of that?
Well, She inspired the idea.
Yeah, okay.
He also goes deep into Simon's rocky relationship with Garfunkel, revealing that Garfunkel never forgave him for signing a solo deal behind his back in 1957. "I was 15, Simon shouted in a 1983 confrontation. Garfunkel replied, "You're still the same guy."
Nice comeback.
Not Dead Yet, the memoir by Phil Collins.
Oh, that's interesting.
A warts and all biography covering his time in Genesis, his three divorces.
Is there going to be a chapter about that kid that killed himself?
Yes. Yeah, that In the Air Tonight's about. Wait, didn't Phil drown the guy?
Is that the story? How's the story? How's the alleged story go, Jay? Do you remember?
Speaking of the microphone.
That's right. Oh, that's right. He claimed he saw some guy drown, but some other guy not saved him or something.
Well, Phil could have saved him, and he didn't. Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, he was too busy coming up with that drum line.
Yeah, I think he was behind the kit, and he didn't want to get out behind the kit. He had the kit right by the water for some reason, shooting a video, something crazy like that. I don't know. It's the most ridiculous story.
It's true. Ask Eminem.
Here's maybe the book I'm most excited about is Bear, The Life and Times of Augustus Owsley Stanley III. By Robert Greenfield.
Owsley, he's the big drug
acid
guy, right?
Maker.
Yeah.
Yes. In 2007, Greenfield interviewed chemist Owsley Stanley III, whose pure potent LSD was favored by Ken Kesey's Merry Pranksters and the Grateful Dead. "I had so much material," says Greenfield. Bear describes an eccentric genius and master manipulator. He persuaded his girlfriend, a UC Berkeley chem major, to drop out and make acid with him. I'm sure her parents were so excited about that. And he eluded the law by pretending to run a legitimate lab. Greenfield also describes how Owsley, who died in 2011, created the Dead's huge 1974 Wall of Sound PA system. It was Owsley's brain in material form, said drummer Bill Kreutzmann, impossible to tame.
Wow. You know, I was just thinking, look how far things have come. So that guy, you know, they mess around a little chemistry, make some LSD. Everybody loves it. And they're merry pranksters. Now you have people making flocka and they go and eat people's faces off and cannonball through front windows.
I know. This was the cleanest acid. I mean, this is the only stuff the Dead. Jerry wouldn't trip on anything else. He was so spoiled by Owsley's acid. But this
nice
acid,
being an LSD snob.
I know. Total LSD snob. But this stuff got around. I mean, all kinds of bands were doing Owsley's acid. He was everybody's acid guru.
So weird.
At least in that world.
That sounds great, that book.
Yeah, that could be really interesting. Because he was around the Dead for a long time. And then I didn't realize he came up with the Wall of Sound. I knew he was involved in their engineering in some certain way. I mean, he's just one of these really brilliant guys who knew a lot of shit about a lot of shit. Then there's My Life with Earth, Wind, and Fire by Maurice White. Could be not. I don't know. David Bowie, Behind the Curtain, traveling with Bowie from 75 to 77. Andrew Kent captured a Soviet Union trip, parties with Iggy Pop, and
that
more.
I was just going to ask, is that when Iggy was touring with him?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, that could be badass.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, when so much has been written about one guy, sometimes if you have a very unique angle, like in this case, the 2 years from 77 to 75 to 77, which is a really seminal period for Bowie, it might be interesting. And then if you're a Smiths fan, of course, you've heard from Morrissey time and time again, but Johnny Marr is finally going to have it out in a book called Set the Boy Free. That's out.
It's a book for M.L. Elric.
Yes.
Huge.
He loves that Smiths cover band. And then, you know, I could just wrap it up with this because we're past the hour mark, but this is this week's Rolling Stone. And this article on Steve Aoki, which we're going to have to carry into the next podcast because there's some more I want to do with this. First of all, these DJs that make all this money,
it
kind of blows my mind. Not because I'm a DJ that talks, but these guys, I mean, basically the way they play other people's music makes them.
Well, a lot of them make their own music.
Yeah, they do. They make some music. Stuff. Some of them make some. They make some music. They're not really musicians.
Well, they're producers sometimes.
They put stuff together.
Yeah.
And in fact, Aoki does. He gets tracks from certain singers, and he's made some records. But I wouldn't consider him a musician, really. But this guy makes $20 million a year DJing.
I think he has some song rights. I think he's produced some artists.
Produced.
Not that he needs the money, considering who his papa is.
Yeah, true. Who's he produced?
Oh, I think because he's from Miami, so I think a lot of the people down in Miami. I have a list off the top of my head, but I know he's produced. I know he's produced songs. Let me look it up.
Yeah, go ahead.
But just like DJ Khaled, he's a DJ, and you know that guy just put out an album. Of course, he makes the music, and people rap on it.
You know, DJ Adam, I saw that. Did you ever watch the documentary?
I never finished it.
You gotta watch that. I know you'll like it.
I gotta watch a lot
of
stuff.
I thought it was right up your alley.
Let's see. Aoki's he's put out a bunch of albums. Oh, you'll love this. He collaborated with producers and vocalists such as Will.i.am, Afrojack, LMFAO, Iggy Azalea, Lil Jon. Let's see. Second album had artists on it such as Snoop Lion. And Rivers Cuomo from Weezer.
Well, he never sings or plays an instrument, put it that way. But he's does producer. Take...
Mm-hmm. He's been sued a lot, too.
For copyright?
No, for his shows, because he likes to throw birthday cakes out there.
Oh, yeah. No.
Crowd surf.
As you're going to hear, this guy loves himself.
Oh, really?
Loves himself. Yeah. That's really my only interest in the story, was just to tell you how absolutely in love a person can be with himself. Steve Aoki knows exactly what will happen when he dies. His corpse will come under the care of the Alcor Life Extension Foundation, an organization with a fleet of cryonic cylinders in Arizona.
Cool.
That's where they freeze your head or your body.
Yeah.
Depending on what you pay for. Ted Williams' head is frozen there.
Easily the most famous.
Alcor promises to preserve Aoki's earthly form at a sufficiently low temperature so that should technology ever advance to the point that Aoki hopes it will, he could be reanimated and or his consciousness can be uploaded to a computer, granting him something like digital immortality.
His consciousness could be uploaded to a computer.
Right. They're just repeating what he told the author.
Very dubious.
Aoki, who's 38, set this plan into motion after reading the work of famed futurist Ray Kurzweil, who speculates on the imminence of such scenarios becoming scientific fact. Under his contract with Alcor, Aoki will pay roughly $220,000. The price tag could have been much less if he's opted to freeze his head alone.
Hmm.
The CEO of the company is only doing his head, he says. But Steve Aoki, it's funny, the CEO of Alcor, no, I'm only freezing my head. So, you know, if you want to go the whole body, it's $220,000. If you just freeze your head, it's a little less.
Well, you know what I've always said about that? If they have the technology to bring back then you're not going to need your body. They can put you on some robot like Futurama did.
Well, I'd want to find a body that
Mr. Burns did.
It was a little faster myself. I never had the great speed.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I could just freeze my head.
Everything's going to be robots anyways, from umpires to police officers. It's going to be all robots. We're going to be floating around like those fat people in WALL-E.
So, let's see. Where was I? The CEO of the company is only doing his head, he says, but Steve Aoki is ready to take his chances on coming back head to toe, maybe 200 years from now, because Steve Aoki is nothing if not one seriously optimistic dude. He's the highest paid, one of the highest paid DJs alive, earning more than $23 million annually. Plays as many as 300 shows in a given year, mixing from Calvin Harris to Jimi Hendrix to Daft Punk to the Backstreet Boys to Future to, no joke, Celine Dion. He's a relentlessly upbeat, urgently inclusive, there is no such thing as bad taste brand of dance floor euphoria epitomized by his trademark onstage move, hurling a heavily frosted cake into one lucky fan's face. Which got him sued, as we found out.
I think he's been sued a couple times, it sounds, from what I just Googled.
So he must really fire this cake. It says he hurls it, so he must really...
The big lawsuit was when he would crowd surf on a giant inflatable raft. At least crowd surf for real and get a finger in your butt. Like every
shocker or two.
Like every chick, when she crowd surfs, every guy has to grope her like an animal.
Aoki's positivity and his preposterously crammed calendar are also at the center of I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, a new Netflix documentary that charts his transformation from a straight-edge kid who played in hardcore bands in his hometown, Newport Beach, California, to 20-something hipster whisperer running an indie label, spinning records, and helping introduce American kids to acts like Blow Party and Justice, the CDJ-twirling Ibiza demigod. Oh, my God. Aoki just landed in Las Vegas from a gig in Croatia and is making his way to the 11,000-square-foot home he owns in his high-end suburb of McDonald Heights. How much do you hate him so far?
Well, I don't think you mentioned, or I don't know if the article mentioned it, but his dad.
Yeah, well, I'm getting there. A notary has been waiting an hour and a half so that she can fingerprint him at his kitchen island, a hunk of creamy white marble. What's this for, Oak? He asks his assistant Eliza as the notary inks up his digits. Eliza isn't certain. Something to the effect of renewing the liquor license for a restaurant he co-owns in Manhattan. Be careful with the ink, he instructs the notary. This marble is expensive. Expensive stuff about...
Oh, dick. You make $20 million a year. You could buy new marble.
Expensive Ooh-hoo. Stuff abounds. Over his shoulders, an enormous Banksy sculpture of a snake that appears to have swallowed Mickey Mouse.
Cool!
A Banksy sculpture, man. Oh, my God.
Did you ever see the Banksy documentary?
Yes.
Exit through the gift shop door. Did you like it?
Not really.
Oh, I thought it was great. That French guy was so full of shit.
I kind of wanted to watch it over again, but then I wasn't so sure I wanted to watch it over again.
Yeah.
So, where was it? Oh, yeah. Off on the horizon is Vegas Strip. Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Cameron Maben.
Where Aoki DJs so often that getting a house here made sense. He's paid $2.5 million for this place and spent at least $3 million more gutting and remodeling it. I like how he tells people, yeah, I spent $3 million remodeling the place. I mean, who else did they get the figure from?
You, yeah.
I suppose it had to be him. Highlights include a Chinese tea bar. I collect teas when I'm overseas. I'll spend hours just, like, trying different teas.
Oh, good. I don't want to know anything about it if I come over to his house.
No, thank you. You can skip me. You can skip me.
Cool. Next. Tea bar. Neat. Okay, cool.
A wardrobe room where every surface is covered in mirrors in tribute to the climactic fight in Enter the Dragon. I fucking love Bruce Lee. A two-story gym where you can leap from a treadmill into a pit of foam cubes after a workout.
It sounds like a waste of space.
Okay. And a home studio where everything from the ceiling to the mixing desk to the swivel chairs is gleaming white or shrieking blue. It's the exact same blue as the Audi i8, one of my favorite cars.
What are you, 14 years old?
I know, what a turd. Aoki's recorded a bunch of music here, likely destined for his next album, Neon Future 3, where his... Neon Future 3, where his aim is to meet an array of unlikely collaborators halfway rather than wedge them into EDM formulas intended for easy use in DJ sets. Whatever. Aoki calls himself a frugal person. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like it.
Furniture and getting his place ready.
You, that's all you care about.
Whatever. Never has that drop fit quite so well. Aoki calls himself a frugal person, but it's clear he inherited a penchant toward ostentation from his father, Benihana founder Rocky Aoki, who cultivated an outsized image as a speedboat racing playboy in the 70s and 80s. Rocky died of cancer in 2008, and Steve's interest in life extension technology stemmed directly from his death. It revealed that he was human, he says, despite having been a larger-than-life character who once boasted to an interviewer, I'm going to live forever! Steve recalls his father's illness. He had tubes all in him, but he'd still grip my hand tight. He was still there fighting. His brain was not ready to die. Mm. Rocky's shadow looms large over Steve in other ways, as I'll Sleep When I'm Dead explores in detail. He was never the most present dad, and he was skeptical of Steve's devotion to his music. He was like, I don't want you to be a bartender and be in a band for the rest of your life. Aside from some help from college tuition, Aoki says, my dad never gave me a dime. I'm sure he never gave him a dime.
I'm sure
he never did.
Who bought your first turntable?
Steve vowed to make him proud. As a kid, Aoki tried to fit in with football players and other members of the in crowd. I wanted to be cool, and it wasn't easy. A self-described small Asian kid trying to hang out. He was the target of racism. Kids pulled at the corners of their eyes, mockingly. Others threw rocks. Do you believe this?
Well,
people threw rocks at him because he was Asian?
No, I would think they'd be his friends. They'd go eat some Benihanas, man. Wouldn't you want to be? I'd be Steve Aoki's friend, little Stevie Aoki's friend, so I'd go eat some Benihanas, right? No?
Sure. No, absolutely. I just would think in growing up in California,
there's
a lot of Asian people there. Yeah. Would people be pulling the corners of their eyes and throwing rocks at an Asian kid? That's just
today, never.
I don't know. It seems to fit his narrative of being this comeback kid and this, I did it all myself. My dad never gave me a dime.
Fake.
Seems a little fake to me, but anyway, just reading. And by the way, remember, he's got from head to toe with the Alcor people to be frozen. And so he can extend his life down the road.
Yeah. He could probably still do shows. He could just play playback music and set his frozen body.
Nobody cares.
Could the, will they freeze his record collection?
Who would know? Yeah.
On
his on the Wikipedia page for him, by the way, under instruments, it has three instruments for him: turntables, CDJ, which is like a sampling machine, and a personal computer. Those are the instruments.
Oh, those are his instruments, eh? No guitar, drums, horns. The internet computer is an instrument, huh?
Personal computer, yeah.
Okay.
No talent, ass clown.
I could see turntables, but personal computer?
I wanted to be cool, and it wasn't easy. A self-described small Asian kid trying to hang out. He was the target of racism. Kids pulled at the corner of their eyes mockingly. Others threw rocks. Things improved when he fell in with skaters and punks who introduced him to all-ages hardcore shows. I shaved my head, had straight-edge X's on my hand, learned how to play guitar. I found purpose.
Oh, well, apparently he claims to play guitar.
At college, he took women's studies courses and became an activist, living in a vegan co-op, staging sit-ins against the administration and protesting on behalf of Mumia Abu-Jamal,
really?
The murderer.
Oh, what a dick.
The murderer of murderers.
Yeah.
Peter Werby's best friend. This is the guy who murdered a cop.
Yeah.
And he's been a big cause celeb.
Philadelphia, really? Yeah.
Yeah. And
who's the big guy that got behind him from Mary Tyler Moore show? Hairy guy.
Oh, Ed Asner.
Ed Asner, yeah. Huge.
Hairy back.
Yeah. That's all I can think of. Right?
Yeah, he's got a really hairy back. Letterman makes fun of his back all the time. Or used to. But Mumia Abu-Jamal, I read so much about him because Peter told me I was uninformed, and so I read up on him just to become more informed and to find out how ridiculous the whole thing was. He was, I think he was doing a podcast from his jail cell on death row at one time. Yeah. Huh. This guy was given so much... For a guy who killed a cop, I mean, the way he was treated was obscene. But he also nursed a burning ambitiousness and business savvy that can be traced in large part to his desire to prove his worth to his dad. With Benihana, Rocky Aoki made millions by turning Japanese cuisine into theater and by carrying himself as a front and center showman, his flashy lifestyle inextricable from the brand. Steve approaches electronic music in a similar way, crowd surfing and headbanging in the booth with rock star swagger.
Okay.
Wait, they're comparing what he does in the DJ booth to what rock stars do on stage? Rock star swagger? Really?
Yeah, I mean, he's behind the turntable.
He's a DJ.
Bobbing his head up and down. And
come on, a DJ and
it's a little different.
Rock star swagger? Come on, stop doing this. Whereas his idols in Daft Punk are literally faceless, Aoki turned his goateed visage into a logo that adorns t-shirts, posters, and a quadricopter drone fans can buy.
Oh, God.
Stop it!
A quadricopter drone fans can buy
you
with
gotta
his
have the
face
Steve
on it.
Aoki drone.
How many people...
No more!
How many
no,
people...
Stop you, it!
How many people do you suppose are buying this drone with his visage on it?
Not that many. There's no way, not
would
that.
Anyone buy that?
Nobody cares.
Sure, Steve Aoki, he's got a basement full of them. there's my tea room. There's my treadmill where I jump into a foam pit. That's the basement. Don't go down there.
Oh, what?
Hey, why not? You go down there.
Got a couple extra quadricopter drones.
With my legs,
you can buy
it.
With my visage on it.
And if you fly it around the house, you're gonna be like, "Hey, watch out for the marble! Hey, watch out for that's a Banksy."
In his house, I count six different enormous paintings of his face rendered in nouveau pop art styles. Ah! Stop it! Stop it, Aoki!
Well, that the last
get over yourself.
The last person I saw that had a painting of themselves in their house on a documentary. Do you remember the Greg Louganis painting?
Oh yeah, the Greg Louganis painting
with his two dogs.
Yes, yes.
I mean, that was huge. This huge painting of himself and his two dogs. He's like kissing one dog and others nuzzling him.
There's also wait,
it's weird. Who has a painting of themselves?
Jim Nance.
Oh well, Nance has a portrait.
Yeah, that's right. It's
like a
full-length. It's an oil painting.
It's a full-length portrait.
Yes, and in the divorce, it was the most important thing that he maintained.
After all, I cried in the divorce hearings.
He allowed his wife to have just about everything but that portrait, which was so important to Jim Nance.
She actually, you know what it was? It was a point of contention in the divorce because he had to put it in storage. He wanted to display it, and she made him put it in storage. She never supported my career.
Why did he have to put it in storage?
Because she never supported my career.
When they were a happy couple, was someday, it in storage?
Someday we have to play back all the videos of him and his wine, the calling. Remember, like, I was so excited calling you that day when I found out about the calling. Drew's going to love this.
Was the painting in storage when they were a happy couple?
I can't recall, but I do remember the painting was awarded to him as... He won some award, and it was like that was their gift to him.
But I believe that was exactly what he wanted. a portrait to a.
I guarantee you, he cried when he saw it.
He is quite pleased with it. He still has it to this day.
Thank you, Hootie.
A few hours after. A few hours after the liquor license fingerprinting session, that was a mouthful, Aoki's on stage at Hakkasian, one of the strip's premier clubs. Of course, he's in it. Leading the packed crowd in a chant of, Steve Aoki! What else would he be leading them in a chant of besides Steve Aoki?
Wait, he's leading them in a chant of his own name?
Yes. He is leading them in a chant of his name, and they're actually chanting it. That's the part I hate the most.
Well, people will chant anything. We've learned that.
His logo, rendered in something like shiny fiberglass, hangs from the rafters in duplicate. Stop it! Enough of this guy's stupid face! My God, he's not even good looking. He plays some Nirvana, some Drake, some Daft Punk. Soon enough, he straps two smoke machines cannons to his wrists and climbs on top of the DJ booth to let them rip. An EDM cyborg priest opening his arms to his congregation.
That baby is ugly.
Where do you get some of those rockets, though, for your arms? It sounds pretty sweet.
I ask if it feels strange. As a one-time outcast, remember, of course, the people holding eyes to make fun of his Asian-ness
heritage,
and throwing rocks at him.
Fake. Mm-hmm.
In California.
Yep, totally remember that. Fake.
As a one-time outcast, to be holding court in such Tony environments populated with such... alphas, the sort of football-playing types who once scorned him and threw rocks at him.
Oh, God. It's the ultimate revenge story.
Maybe in the beginning, he says, but what I learned was music is not exclusive. That type of guy might have been racist to me when I was a kid, but I don't even want to exclude him. The more you can bring positive energy to all people, that's the goal.
Great. Good for you. Good for you, and you're the only one that can do it.
Why did I just read an article about someone I can't stand?
Well, you didn't
know. I hate him.
You didn't know. You couldn't stand him.
I did because I read it before.
Speaking of someone else you can't stand, did you know Chapman, Mark David Chapman, was denied parole again?
Yes.
Okay.
No, yeah. I didn't know that, but I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, for the ninth time.
Why did Rolling Stone do an article on someone so annoying? Do you think the author knew he was making fun of him, kind of?
Oh, who was the author?
Jonah Weiner.
I don't know.
Weiner.
Weiner. Carlos Joseph Danger.
I mean, some of the stuff. I mean, he keeps talking about all the sort of obsessions he has of his own face. You know, the drones and the visages.
For being a guy all about
chanting his name,
inclusiveness and peace and harmony in the world getting together, he really loves himself.
Yeah, oh, I know. No, it's all about him. But, you know, the amazing thing is that he did it in spite of everything being against him. His father didn't spend any time with him.
Yeah.
People threw rocks at him because he was a young, small Asian person, and they put their eyes up, their fingers up the corner of their eyes to make fun of his Asian-ness.
Somebody was trying to take advantage of him because his dad started Benihana's.
Yeah. Kids used him.
It was presumably. I mean, that's what I would think.
Anyway. I want to do this today, but I had no idea that Charlie Sheen was going to happen, is I wanted to call Alcor to find out how much I could freeze my head for
versus
my whole body.
Cool.
Because, you know, I'd love to freeze my whole body, but if it's a lot cheaper to do my head, I'll do my head.
Clearly, the next question is, well, what if it's just your head and you're gone?
Well, let's find out next time. And I guess it's Charlie Sheen tomorrow. We'll see. I'm not so sure I'm believing it, but we'll find out. So, everybody have a good one, and we'll see ya.